the Senior Manager for Global Health Partnerships for Unilever Research and Development from the Netherlands.
Martin? Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me, Janet Beauvais and the rest of the organizing committee. And thanks to Mr. Dunn for an excellent presentation. I sometimes feel that I only have to fill in the name of Unilever and we do kind of the same steps, I guess. I am a public health nutritionist by training and I joined Unilever 5 years ago to work in a new team on health partnerships, so partnering with global organizations such as UNICEF, United Nations World Food Programme, GAIN, the Global Alliance on Improved Nutrition. That's a bit part of our CSR strategy, I would say. But more and more we're going away from CSR, perceived as something that's aside the business as being in the middle of our business strategy. I think there's a challenge with that as well. So I will not too much talk about our CSR. I heard some questions about what are you doing in, for instance, sustainable production. Unilever is doing a lot in sustainable production of tomatoes, tea, palm oil, very important. We are doing a lot on looking at how we use our water, so reduction of water, of CO2 reduction, how, you know, the waste that we produce, the packaging. We're looking into all of that, but I think that the most important thing is the products that we put on the market. That's our core business. So Unilever, for those who don't know, it's a food and a soap company. Very simple description I always give. We are present in 150 countries in the world, so it's both a developed and a developing world. And I think that with my work particularly, I'm not here to speak for entire Unilever, with my work I'm more focusing on the developing countries, which doesn't mean that we're not active in looking at nutrition and health in developed countries. Actually, Unilever's mission is vitality for all. Vitality in this sense is something that marketeers in our company translate as looking good, feeling good, and getting more out of life. For me, I'm a scientist. I was trained as a scientist. For me, this is more about health, nutrition, and hygiene for all. If we're looking at malnutrition, which I think we're doing here, whether it's the overnutrition side or the undernutrition side, for the overnutrition side, I think the food sector has been triggered a couple of years ago by external pressure, amongst others, the WHO global strategy to fight obesity and chronic diseases. We have been triggered to take up our responsibility to provide a healthier choice, as Mr. Dunn also said. So also Unilever has taken it upon themselves to screen 30,000 food products on their sodium contents, their sugar contents, and our trans fat and saturated fat contents. And that has led to a lot of product reformulations. At the same time, it's not just the pressure from this public sector, from the WHO. It's also the cry from consumers for a healthier choice. So there is a market. There is a demand for these type of products. And actually, I think that change that Unilever has made and Campbell and probably other companies have been making to a healthier choice has actually provided us some lucrative business, because you can make different claims on your products because there's a demand for it. So in developed worlds, it's going well. There is a market. I think that's very important. If we look at the other side, if we're looking at the developing countries, it's not so much a question of getting the baddies out, but it's much more a question of getting the goodies in. So that's the food fortification we're talking about. But then we're getting into another arena. There's not that much pressure from a global agenda, actually. Food fortification is not that high on the agenda. And moreover, there's actually not so much of a market. Yes, public health organizations feel the need for food fortification in developing countries. But the consumers themselves, they don't. So what we first would need to do is create a market. So there actually, the conclusion from my side has been there's little incentives for the food sector to go into this market to produce fortified foods that are affordable, that have a health benefit for low-income consumers. And why is that? Well, I already mentioned there's no market, so we need to create a demand. But also, there still is the issue of cost. Everybody claims that food fortification is so cheap, certainly. But there is a cost, and who's going to absorb the cost if the consumer can't? If it's about fortifying staple foods that are very cheap, or about salt, these are all very low added value products. So any cost added to that can hardly be absorbed by the consumer. So should it be absorbed by the producer? Maybe, but then their profit margins go down. So how sustainable is that? If you have a company that has to choose where to invest their money, then they will invest the money in those products that give a better profit margin. So there is an internal composition. How can you make the case, the business case internally, for investing in food fortification? Also, the public sector had, I think initially started on the food-based approach, eating products that are rich in vitamins, or health sector approach. So distribution of vitamin A drops, distribution of iron tablets, etc. Or it was the food fortification of staple foods. Well, staple foods in developing countries are produced by millions of farmers. How all these farmers are producing for their own consumption. So fortification at the central level is a challenge as well. And processed foods are made centrally. But processed foods are considered out of reach of low-income consumers. So again, a dilemma. What food, what type of company? And then I think the marketing aspect. There is, of course, it's always sensitive, but there's a certain type of foods targeted at a certain age group, notably the 6 to 24 months, where you just can't market because it is seen as very critical by NGOs, by the public sector. But we all know that the local foods that are there are not sufficient. Breast milk is great, but after 6 months, it's simply insufficient for the growth of a child. So we need something extra. So what do we give? And then if it's made difficult or there is a challenge to bring a good food to the market, companies step out. They criticize, they think, oh, this is way too difficult, let's not go there. So all of that are challenges to get a good product to the market. There's no commercial or insufficient commercial or economic incentives, and there's insufficient social incentive for companies. That's why we went into partnerships. I think the public-private sector partnerships, the PPPs, have been a buzzword over the past years. Everybody is in partnerships, so are we. As I said, we work with UNICEF for hygiene, we work with the World Food Programme, with GAIN on nutrition, and we work with many smaller NGOs. Why we do that? Because we hope to get insights from these partners in what the needs are of low-income consumers. We also hope to work with them where they play a convening role to get other stakeholders at the table, government, NGOs, academics, so that you can really get into a dialogue and exchange, you know, what the challenges are. And also because we believe that maybe to really reach the base of the pyramid where we as companies can't go, I mean, these are people that do not buy in supermarkets or other local markets where we sell our products. How can we get and reach them? Through a social program. So maybe we can do that with partners. But still, I think that all our partnerships have remained rather small. They have kind of stayed in a pilot phase. And we're doing great jobs, we're having great interventions, not just Unilever, other companies as well. We all know examples, but we're not able to scale up. And why is that? I think it's because these PPPs are outside of the mainstream of our business. They're not at the core of our business case, because maybe it's still a little bit of CSR. Maybe also because there's not a belief or a true conviction that we can serve both the social objectives as the business objectives at the same time. There is still this bit of suspicion, this kind of tension of how can we work together, because public sector is afraid of private sector running away and misusing them. and the other way around. Private sector is kind of afraid being blamed and you know, carrot and stick story. So I think there is, we have a lot of steps to make in these public-private partnerships. Personally, I believe that we should look on to this as a business challenge, not just as a challenge in development. I do believe that private companies should use, should do what they're best in doing it. That is, developing products, positioning these products as kind of aspirational to consumers. Consumers all over the world, also in developing countries, do not want something that they don't value. And if it's for free, or if it's positioned as only for the poor, it's really not aspirational, and people don't like it. Also, people with who live on $1 or $2 a day sometimes buy a soft drink or buy cigarettes. That's by choice. It may not be a healthy choice, but it's a choice. It's because it's giving them some emotional satisfaction, maybe. So the choices are not always based, the choices we make as consumers are not based on just rational knowledge. It's good for me, so I buy it. No, it's very much emotional, and I think that business is good in that. We do launch products every day, and we make people buy them, whether it's a new variety of Magnum ice cream, or whether it's a Nintendo Game Boy or anything. We are able to make people feel that they need it or want it. And if we could use the same mechanisms to really market, between gimmicks, market healthy products, healthy behavior, really get that to low-income consumers, that the consumer themselves value it and it's a, there's a demand for it, I think that then we can play our role. And I also believe that the public sector somehow should make a move in accepting that that is the best role the private sector can play. It's the most sustainable one. We can do charity, we can work, and we definitely should work on all kind of programs aside to help feed the hungry. Unilever does that. I mean, every company do their charity or their social responsibility projects. But that is not sustainable. What is sustainable is when it's in the center of our business. So I would actually make a plea for a new model of partnerships where we all play our role, whether there is more acceptance in the specific roles of public and private sector, and where we do a kind of cost sharing of the risk of going into food fortification, where the public sector helps the private sector in creating the market, in creating the demand, not by making advertisement for a specific product, of course, but by advertising or marketing for a specific type of products, the need for specific type of products and what they can do, and then just let the private sector go out and do their commercial thing. The affordability issue is really very important. As I said before, low added value products like salt iodization, it's very difficult to absorb the extra cost of the iodization, etc. And especially if, salt iodization is a success story. With the help of UNICEF and a lot of companies, it is a success story. But Unilever has also played a role in that in Ghana. And what you see is that when the enabling environment isn't right, when the legislation isn't correct, then you still compete against non-iodized salt or iodized salt of less quality. But you make the same claims, and that is for a company not a viable business, and therefore people pull out. So there's a lot of reasons why it's difficult, and I think that if we acknowledge from both sides, partners, that we have our own role, we should work together in a more intimate way. And that's what I'd like to share with you. Thank you.